I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a pre-recorded program presented by KSL News Radio and Intermountain Healthcare. Healthy Mind Matters, brought to you by Intermountain Healthcare. We discuss the important community issues of stronger mental health, emotional wellness, and the growing problem of addiction. Here's our host, Maria Chaleos, on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Thank you for joining us for Healthy Mind Matters. Today we are talking about domestic violence and the Stop the Violence campaign. With me, Glady Larson, who is the Director of Development for Safe Harbor, and Lisa Nichols, the Assistant Vice President of Community Health for Intermountain Healthcare. Glady, you've been talking about how often victims of domestic violence aren't far from the perpetrator of that violence. And I want to talk about just for a second so people can understand, because I'm sure for many people, they don't understand that their spouse or whoever, you know, goes to work. And that's kind of a problematic right now, I understand. But there's usually time when they're separate from them. So explain what happens in a domestic violence situation. Just kind of explain the control element that exists in that relationship.
Control is actually one of the elements that the perpetrator of domestic violence is using to continue that violence. They want power over the victim. And when there's isolation, and now the victim doesn't have an opportunity to possibly make a call, or to, as they're going to work, they can't stop and visit a facility that can help them. They have no way of contacting even law enforcement, because they might actually have their phone taken away from them. They might actually have, they no longer probably have to go to work. They're working from home. So they don't have the 2 seconds that takes for them to ask for help. And they're constantly being, they have full control of every action that they take. So it takes, I know that a lot of people have probably seen one of the videos that's out there where a victim of domestic violence went to a vet just to take their dog. And while she was waiting at the vet, she slipped a note to one of the receptionists. If you have seen that video, you notice how that took 2 seconds. She just said she needed to go to the restroom, went back, slipped a note, and that's how they were able to get a hold of the perpetrator. But most of the time, if you're isolated, you don't even have those 2 seconds. That means that now the person perpetrating that violence is in full control of everything that you do and every minute of your day.
So, Lisa, that is the importance behind this campaign and getting people to act now. What exactly would you like folks to be doing?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we want them to be aware of this crisis and the ways that it's escalated as part of the pandemic, and then just to feel some personal power in terms of being able to watch, to listen, and to take some action. And, you know, we were speaking earlier, sometimes people will be dismissive, but I think it's also somewhat common for them to think, you know, that it's a helpless situation and that they can't do anything. And perhaps they've even, you know, mentioned this to their friend or family member before, and the situation hasn't changed. And so there's some patience required here, because it's a major life change to disrupt your family, and particularly when you're in a very vulnerable situation, maybe not feeling as confident in yourself. And so encourage people to listen, to speak up, to offer help, and just to continue to do it as frequently as they can.
I think part of the problem is when I get in a situation like this, I want to fix it. And that can be a very dangerous place to be and a very unhelpful place for a victim. Maybe talk about the balance, Gladie. How do we can't fix it for them, obviously, but what can we do?
We can't fix it for them, but we definitely can be there for them. I think sometimes when a victim of domestic violence is going through that experience, they feel very alone, and you can be their support. You can let them know they are not alone. There are committed resources out there in the community to help them. There's professionals that know exactly what each person needs and how to support them. So it's taking that extra step. It's letting them know they're not alone. It's believing them and making sure that that the victim knows that if for some reason the problem escalates even further, that they know that they can go to your home or that they can give you a call and then you'd be there for them. So that's really important. And that's what you can do. I would advise that no one get in between the person perpetrating the violence or the victim. I think that's a very dangerous position to be in. And unfortunately, law enforcement is in that position very many times. Law enforcement, when they go to a call, sometimes that is one of the deadliest calls that they will answer, is a domestic violence call. So please leave the hard parts to the professionals and just be support. Just let them know they're not alone. Reach out to anyone that can help them and give them all of the resources that you can find so that they know what the next steps can be.
Healthcare providers play a big role in that. That's probably someone that, you know, most people can see.
Yeah, they do play a big role. And some individuals are going to share their history of domestic violence, but many will not. So as I said earlier, it's really, I think, vital for health systems to move towards universal screening. We also know that there are people who are at higher risk. Women of childbearing age often are at higher risk. There are diagnoses that more commonly go with a history of domestic violence. We don't want to rely there, but we want to be aware and really be part of the solution in terms of being a safe space, identifying someone who might be a victim, offering them resources, and really just meeting them where they are. You know, Marie, as you said, you want to fix it. You want to, you know, whisk them out of that situation. And sometimes it's just not the right time or the right thing. So it's continuing to offer those resources.
I think that's such an important point, Lisa, because not all situations are the same. They're not all at the same level. And maybe, Gladie, maybe that's something we should define. Domestic violence comes in all sorts of different forms, doesn't it?
That's correct. Domestic violence is not just physical. I think that's what most people understand as domestic violence, but we see financial, economical, psychological violence. So I think that sometimes it's just understanding what domestic violence truly is. There's also something that we use in all of the domestic violence agencies and service providers, and that's called the safety plan. And the safety plan then meets that victim where they are and what the next steps may be. And it, a lot of times it's leaving the perpetrator or leaving that violent situation is possibly the most dangerous time of their life. If we can meet with them and teach them what the next steps are and doing it in a safe way, that's going to help them leave that situation, but do so in a safe way. And that's what we can offer them in all of the different agencies that are out there. We have professionals that are dedicated to meeting them and keeping them safe.
All right, we need to take a break. Again, I want to give the information, the resources available to folks who may be in the situation. The state link line is 1-800-897-LINK or 1-800-897-5465. We'll be right back.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.